Consciousness in life. They don't see the principles of karma as you say that you need. They do not see justice, they do not see mercy, they do not see compassion. These thoughts are not in their consciousness. That's why they are called wicked. But when I say wicked, we are using old English. What are we trying to say? Negative thinking individuals. The Psalms are laid out for only two types of people in this universe. The right thinker, which is positive thinking, and the wrong thinker, which is negative thinking. Now, we can deviate from one or the other. We can deviate from positive to negative, or we can leave the negative and become positive. But in this particular migration, this particular traveling back and forth, we are going to be caught up in the ego nature of ourselves. We have to understand that. So the mantra, which is sounds, means spiritual aid. The word means spiritual aid. See, that sound is designed to help you to understand yourself. And it is a science. It is a science of using sound waves in consciousness. And it's a science utilizing the thought patterns and how to make these thought patterns crystallize to alter your behavior. Now, if we sum up the sounds, we can say the sounds is laid out to show us an ethical way of how to live. It is the actual ethical plan of living, utilizing thought patterns. So, they say the negative people will not seek after God, the wicked will not seek after God. That means a negative thought does not reflect, because negativeness tends to deteriorate. It's a form of internal corrosion. And this internal corrosion breeds harassment, breeds embarrassment, it breeds every type of contempt, disgust. So, in your own home, the very first contact that you ever encounter with the negative force is those individuals who want to harass you. You know, one time I had a dream. I dreamt where the harassment looked like exactly like a picador. Know what a picador is? Picador is something you use at the bullfight. Stick it in the bull. To harass the bull till the bull gets weak. Our well-wishers, which are our closest ones in our family, are the picadors. They're picking away at you. Now the fifth verse says, his ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above out of his sight. As for all of his enemies, he buffeted them. Well, negative thoughts are like that. When you look at a thought pattern that has the roots in deterioration or a degenerating of the routine mechanism, it will reach a crisis, and very grievous crisis. It will reach a point of no return. It will collapse. That's why the initiate is saying the ways of a negative person are grievous. They tend to bring grief. They tend to bring desolation. tends to tear you down inside of yourself. If we follow those types of thought patterns, we will end up being in a state of tremendous grief, only to find ourselves wringing our hands and asking, "Oh Lord, what happened? Why didn't you show me?" Now, for example, Cain killed Abel, and he was asked by the Lord, by the creative intelligence, "Where's his brother?" And he remarked, "Am I my brother's keeper?" But then the Lord placed a particular stamp upon Cain, putting him in a situation that was very grievous to Cain. He said, "No man lay a hand upon him. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." Cain cried out, that was a harsh judgment. It's not a harsh judgment. It is how the law of life works. You can't have something for nothing in this universe. It's always something for something. It's based upon the law of cause and effect. The law of action. You've done something to someone, and by all means, that action will come back to you. If that law is not true, then let us look at some facts about life. If Cain killed Abel without any cause or reason on Abel's part, then Abel dies of death without knowing the reason why he's going to kill him. His soul will cry out for his body. That consciousness will want to know why his mechanism is not functioning. Now, the creative intelligence must have some type of restitution for that soul. So, it says, all right, to Abel in the spiritual body, you will have a turn to kill Abel. But in the meantime, Cain is living and you are dead. You don't have your body. The question comes up, if Cain killed Abel, when is Abel going to get back at Cain? Is the first and last time for Abel, there is no more worrying about Cain. And Cain don't have to worry. He's a negative man. He killed Abel. Abel is out of existence. That's the end of it. Abel can't bother him. Well, why should his conscience bother him? Interesting. If it's the first and last time for Abel, and the first and last time for Cain, Abel is dead, why is the conscience bothering him? Whose conscience is bothering who? Interesting, huh? So if who's wanting? You really didn't kill nobody, you kill yourself. You actually hurt yourself by the fact that you struck your brother. And you actually struck your brother with the physical form of your own conscience. It is your conscience in totality that represents God. You actually broke up by breaking up the form. Abel represented God as Cain's conscience.
Here's the sun, and all the rays are scattered through the sight, the hearing, the smelling, the taste. So it really doesn't control anything outside until it's focused or beamed. Master Jesus realized this was the key to go into the light. Now, when thine eyes are single, you have to, single indicates one-pointedness. It indicates steadiness. It indicates focusing. We can sit for hours in meditation and discover our minds wandering all over the universe, never getting down to focusing. But when we get down to focusing, we have to relate. So So the first basic discipline or technique of focusing the eyes is to pick a point and focus, center it. The outward object in front of you and look without blinking. This focusing tends to strengthen your concentrative force. At the same time, you become attuned to certain frequencies that you normally would not notice when the eyes are all scattered. For example, when you're driving around the highway and the road is hot, and if you're watching ahead, which is focusing, you know, we have one of the best methods of learning focusing to drive a car. Because you have to keep ahead. Do you see the heat waves? Have you ever seen the heat waves on the highway? At those moments, you are focusing. You're actually practicing focusing. The lining up. Now, if you can see the heat waves under those conditions, let us extend it to another level of acceleration now. To sit in one corner and just focus. Automatically, after a little while, the whole room would come alive. And those who survive their decent burials are ever present. Nothing to be afraid of. They are there. They have to be there. They are in a different frequency. And we walk through them totally oblivious to their existence. The elemental kingdom is there. Those who can see them, now it becomes a sort of a curiosity for them. It's like a monkey brought into a zoo to be looked at. Anyone breaking through that mental block becomes a sort of a curiosity on the other side. It's not normal for us to see through this block or to be capable of focusing our consciousness in that direction. And when we do it, we are on the observation table. But we are breaking into light because they are in different levels of the light. And the first discipline that they enforced on the student is learn to focus. Keep your attention steady. So discipline number one is focus. Outside. Exercises to focus the sight. One is to put a dot in front and gaze. Two, train the eyes to focus. Get back. Focus. Picture yourself practicing an hour a day. Yours truly have to go through it. You know, hours upon hours of constant practice to focus. Now you see why I said Orientals seem to be scrutinized. Pull back, you know, to get the consciousness to work. And bringing the finger right up within the closeness of the sight and gazing. These are different degrees of focusing. Now the eyes do act like a lens. It can be telescopic and it can be microscopic once you adjust the focusing. The techniques are simple. Patience is required. An hour a day is all that is necessary. But broken up into four periods, that's 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the middle of the day, 15 minutes in the evening, and 15 minutes before going to bed. That gives you an hour of practice. Now remember, Jesus didn't come on the scene and perform all his knowledge by wishing it up. Between the age of 12 to 30, those were years of the bittersweet learning, the years of gradually molding consciousness to make it work. He was a master. And as the term implies, he mastered these things where he could use them. So first comes mastery, before comes sanctity. That's why we say saints, masters. You must master these forces before you can live that spiritual life properly or have the moral ethics in it. Mastery is vitally important. Discipline number two. Christian writings, Jesus used the term, I and my Father are one. He was applying a breathing technique in that statement. Breath is life. It comes in and goes out. It makes a sound in the nostrils. Now listen to the sound in your nostrils as the air enters and goes out. What does it seem to sound like? Wind. Can you associate it in language structure?
Yes.
Well, if you were to make words for it, how would you try to simulate it with the vocal cord?
Sure.
Yeah. The actual sound, what? How would you try to describe it with the voice? You know, the Indians on the reservations, they are capable of simulating any song by the human voice. That you could hardly tell the difference when you hear it. If it's a dog barking or it's a human being doing it. This is one of their prayer techniques. Something like that. So that the plexus is spread to give you now the aggressiveness you need and the control in the muscle structure. And you make the shifts inside. Now, in Sanskrit, this word literally means I am. I and the Father are one. Master Jesus, applying the discipline and the identity of the consciousness to the breath, knew fully well who he was. Not intellectualizing now. There's a big difference. This is synchronization between consciousness and the life beat in the breath. He was able to synchronize. That every time he sent out the air, he was out there. Every time he pulled the air in, he was in here. This takes years of discipline to be able to shift out, go out, shift back, and come back in. Saint Paul made a statement similar by saying, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. I have the ability to shift with the movement, consciousness and life, out in, that the body has this apparent condition known as death, the apparent condition known as life. He was fully identified. This shifting goes on. Now, unconsciously, you are doing it. It is when you do it consciously, not until that time, can you really be practicing the very first commandment laid down by a master like Jesus. Love the Lord with all your mind. Not half of the mind, not three-quarters of the mind, or a quarter. All. That means you've got to be fully conscious. You can't fall asleep. Any disciple found sleeping in the East, the first thing we'll do is give him a good whack at the head. Wake him up. Jesus was not that violent to his disciples, but he sure gave him a tongue lashing. When? In his meditation?
No. Wasn't there one thing when he was in the boat with a couple of his disciples, and the boat started tossing because they ran away?
Mm-hmm.
He tried to walk up Jesus and woke up Jesus, and then said, whoever I ran, he woke up the sick and Jesus said, have faith.
He was in a state of suspended animation.
Okay.
When you can master this movement that I'm talking of, you can be in that state and cause the boat to, and cause the winds to create it, to scare the students so they'll recognize the technique is important. He's doing the technique. He's setting the stage for their development. How are they going to gain the faith to overcome the fear of drowning? How are they going to gain the faith to overcome the fear of conditions that face them when they go out into the world? They may be on a boat crossing the river, and they are among people who are alien to their culture, and they want to carry truth to them. These people are living with fear problems. And they may be lying there in that state and they say, oh gosh, that guy is sleeping, why wake him up? You've been all gone drunk. But if that person does not have that awareness to set the stage, how is he going to help them? A master does not do anything for show. He does everything to lift the level of the disciples' consciousness. The people in the boat were his disciples, meaning that they were being trained in the art of disciplines. He is a master of the situation. So apparent sleep to them was setting the stage that the boat would rock. The winds would appear to be crushing in. The waves are coming. Their fear structure is under confrontation for the first time. Their attachment to their physical survival is so strong that they can't break. How many of us fear death in many forms, though we don't realize it? There are many ways we are in a state of fear. And a realized master trying to release his disciples from these states has to create conditions to break them. Otherwise, he's not helping them. He's here to lift the disciple up. The disciple should be as the master. That's why he's training his consciousness. So he sets the stage. And he was in interlocking with the breath. So when they saw him, he says, be not afraid. Isn't that the words he used? So he is trying to bring them up above levels of fear in their own makeup, things that they would set the mental patterns that cause fear. He wants to bring them past that point. To show them. Because bread is life. What is there to be afraid of? If they were practicing their technique that they were told, or the discipline, they would not fear. In the first place, they would not even disturb the master. They would have realized that the master was doing this for their benefit. Because they would have gone out in the out of exhalation, come back in with the inward inhalation, and I was seeing the relationship in consciousness acting on consciousness, the master's consciousness acting on the disciple's consciousness. They would have united in consciousness. That's why they said in the Eastern disciplines, the student must always look into this consciousness. He must always line up himself with this master's consciousness. Now, Jesus does use another word, the disciple should be like his master. He should line up. He has to raise his consciousness. Follow? So discipline number two is the art of breath. Now, there are many techniques for breathing, but the most effective one that we're interested in is the one that occurs in you naturally to give you the identity. In this particular discipline or technique, you do not force or compel yourself to breathe. You do not hold the air in, and you do not hold the air out. You merely observe yourself breathing. Because you are consciousness, life flowing through a cellular mechanism. And when you're ready to go permanently, you'll have to travel out on that same current. And any sense of desire or attachment when the frame falls over, you'll see, well, I lived in that shell and did not even know who I was. Now I'm outside of it. This is a shock. It is when I can go in and out of this, like taking clothes off and putting them on. Then I am free. So self-observation is focusing now. So self-observation is focusing now. You're observing yourself performing a function. Well, let's try it. Observe yourself breathing. Don't attempt to stop it. Don't attempt to pull it in. Just observe the fact that you do breathe. Now, let's take this same technique and go one step further. Sound is important. First, it was sight. Now it's breathing. Then we're going to go into hearing. Art of hearing. That involves the sound, the actual sound that is being made in the movement. The word that we can relate to sounds like something like soham, soham. When you watch the breath now, that you are disciplining the nostril. You want now to hear the sound and not just merely watch it. You want to hear the incoming sound. You want to hear the outgoing sound. It's in the hearing that identification and synchronization begins. You have to hear it to bring this synchronization. Now, you can repeat the word to strengthen your concentration or strengthen your focusing. But you must repeat it without moving the tongue. Now, this is going to be a little feat for the tongue, you know. That's the fourth little part that has to be disciplined. You don't want to move the tongue. You want to watch. You want to hear, but you don't want to talk. Now let's try it. The word that you're going to mentally repeat is so hum. Comes in, you mentally repeat, hung. This is pronounced hum or hung. And hear it, but don't speak it with the tongue. And as it goes out, you mentally repeat without moving the tongue and hearing it, sum. You are synchronizing the sound with the movement. Now, you do this with focusing. So you can close the eyes and focus, or partially open the eyes and focus. So,
gets stiff, like certain portions seem to shut off.
then you start to worry. The sensation like if it's getting numb. This is because feeling is slowly diminishing in each area, or in many areas. But the mind, craving sensation, and programmed to the fact that if you don't feel something is wrong, immediately sets up an alarm system and end of meditation. In the discipline of bodily sensation, you have to reach the point of withdrawal, that you relax it. Don't feel anything. Someone should go ahead and tap you. That's why if you practice with another brother or sister in the room, they can test if you have reached that state where you are withdrawn. It's not too wise to be by yourself when you go into that state, because you're going to have doubts about yourself. So group meditation becomes important. The group discipline becomes important by having someone go around the room while they're meditating and arriving at that level and checking you. This is an actual discipline to know that you are making progress in this withdrawal. How long you can stay inside, outside the range of feeling, determines the strength of the focusing of the consciousness. That you can handle something now in a tangible way. These masters who realize themselves have withdrawn to that point where they're fully identified, that they can say, I am not the body. But they don't intellectualize. They know positively they are in a state of beingness, and they walk. And there is no such sensation that to the normal man. In the case of Mahatma Gandhi, when they operated on him to take out his appendix, there was no medical drugs used to deaden the pain. And he kept on a long conversation while they were busy cutting open and taking out the appendix. You see what I'm talking about? The withdrawal of the consciousness from the physical frame in a conscious way, to the extent that you can go ahead, look, there's no relationship to a sensation. Now, this tells you an interesting story, or throws an interesting sidelight to the crucifixion on the cross. Last night, everyone thought it was a horrible death. Nailing someone to the cross. Look at the agony, the pain he's going to go through. Who would want it? A realized master knows his mechanism thoroughly. And when they nail him, he wouldn't feel it. Anand Swami, the master who initiated me into Swamihood, when I met him, told me an interesting story about his life. And he carries a scar to bear it. He said, I was practicing my basic disciplines on feeling. I was initiated at the age of 14. And when I was 65, ready to retire from this world, I decided to go visit my teacher. All these years, he said, I did not see anything inside, heard anything. It was all blank. But now I'm 65 years, ready to retire. I'm going to go and see my spiritual teacher and ask him why I'm not getting progress. He went to see his teacher, thinking he would see an elderly man with long beard and gray and haggard. He saw someone looking half the age of himself. said to his teacher, I don't see anything. I'm not making progress. I've been doing all the disciplines required, and I'm not making progress. So his teacher said to him, tell me, how long can you really sit down and meditate without getting restless? He says, 2 hours. Now, from 14 to 65, and end up with a statement of 2 hours, boy, I said to myself that I heard that I got a long way to go. At 65, he said he was able to sit down for 2 hours without interruption. But I realized that he was talking inwardly. The teacher said, show me. So he sat down, put himself in the lotus position, and this is a very difficult position for a man of 65. And it would entail a great deal of aches and pains if you were not limber enough. He sat down and meditating. At the end of 1 hour, his teacher took an old rusty nail, watched the calf of the leg, and nailed him to the floor and waited. He opened his eyes at the end of 2 hours and said, you see, teacher, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything. And I'm not restless. But just that time I started to get restless, I came out. So the teacher says, well, take a good look at yourself. And he looked. There was a nail pinned in his leg down to the ground. He can't move it. He has to yank it loose. Then the teacher says, I'm not going to heal it. I'm going to leave the scar for you to remember how far you were in God. And he carries the scar, punches right through. Then he said to me, this is what a master goes through. Therefore, when he said, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world, Master Jesus was not suffering in any sense of the word when he was on the cross. He had reached that level. The discipline of feeling. Now, there's one more discipline, and there are many more, but I have to go to one that is in order to save time, which everyone seems to remember very much. The discipline of the abdomen. Food. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. And in all my studies in the Eastern practices, fasting is often emphasized as a discipline for the body. When you practice fasting, there is an unusual quality that comes out of the body. I'll leave it right here for now. We'll take a break and ask questions after. Thank you.
for Otto. A-U-P-O.
Mm-hmm.